few moments, we'll be standing and singing the song that's been announced as a means of encouragement for those who are outside the body of Christ. We're glad to see everyone here today, especially those that have been out for some time. Good to see Jackie back with us again, as well as others that have had some minor illnesses over the past few weeks, able to be back with us again. Good to see those with us that are visiting today, traveling from different places. I think we have some from Indianapolis today here. Trish, good to see you today, as well as others. We appreciate that. Appreciate the fact of you coming out and being with us. Be with the church family here at Gardner Lane. In fact, today I want to talk with you for a few moments. Maybe the sermon title for the internet today will be the or how I appreciate my church family. And sometimes we ask a question about how a church ought to function. I think of the 93% in the Pew study, 93% of people that believe in Jehovah God. Not Allah, but 93% that believe in Jehovah in America today. But only 30% attend congregation at least once a month. And there are seminars galore concerning the fact of, they use the term, how we're supposed to do church. How we're supposed to do church. But as we talk about this morning, I just want to talk about how we're going to prosper as a congregation. In fact, how are we going to survive and prosper in a world that's very antagonistic to a Christian's faith? And what I want to do today is to take you over to Psalm chapter 124, sort of an odd place to go for a local church. But Psalm 124, and we'll start there this morning, Psalm chapter 124. In Psalm 124, in verse 1 beginning, short psalm, song of the ascent as they're making their way up to Jerusalem. Had it not been the Lord who was on our side, now Israel, let Israel now say, had it not been for the Lord who was on our side, when men rose up against us, when they would have swallowed us alive, when their anger was kindled against us, when the waters would have engulfed us and a stream would have swept over our soul, then the raging waters would have swept over our soul. Blessed be the Lord who has not given us to be torn by their teeth. Our soul has escaped as a bird out of the snare of the trapper. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth. Well, we ask the question again. How do we prosper as a congregation? And what we want to do is, like we do every week, we want to look at what the early church did. And then that'll give us our answer. 5 points today and the lesson will be yours. 5 points, the lesson will be yours. First of all, we need to recognize the presence and the power of God. That's what Psalm 124 is all about. Had it not been for the Lord who was on our side. And of course, the Lord is on our side as well. We see over in Acts chapter 11, verse 19 is where really Acts chapter 8, verse 4 leaves off, and then they go into a commentary about different people that were converted in chapters 8, 9, and 10. And then they come back to the thought again in chapter 11 and verse 19. But I want to read verse 21 beginning. It says, "The hand of the Lord was with them, and a large number who believed turned to the Lord. And the news about them reached the ears of the church at Jerusalem, and they sent Barnabas off to Antioch. And when he arrived and witnessed the grace of God, he rejoiced and began to encourage them all with a resolute heart to remain true to the Lord." There's two subpoints I want you to see here regarding this. One is that God blessed God blessed the teaching of His Word. And God still today blesses the teaching of His Word. We need to remember that. And not only that, God blesses the teaching of His Word, but God raised up the right person to meet their needs. In this situation here in chapter 11, it was Barnabas, to where He raised up Barnabas to meet their needs. And then Saul, who later became Paul, he was brought there as well to meet their needs. The same has happened within this local church over the last almost 95 years now. 49 years ago this month, we had a tragedy in this church. One of our elders, who had been an elder here for 13 years, Elder Gary, he was killed. He was killed tragically. But I tell you what, God raised up people to meet the needs of this church. Trisha's here today, and her daddy, J.C. Padgett, was appointed an elder just a few weeks after Elsie was killed, so that the needs of this church could continue to be met. And that's what we need to understand. In this congregation, God continually raises people to meet the needs of this church and other churches as well. There's a second point that I want you to see here, and that is that we emphasize being of one mind and one spirit. We emphasize being of one mind and one spirit. In Ephesians and in chapter 4, and in verses 1 through 6, he says, "Therefore I, the prisoner of the Lord, implore you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling with which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, showing tolerance to one another in love." Then he says in verse 3, to be diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit. And when he talks about the unity of the Spirit, he gives us an answer to the unity of the Spirit. What is the unity of the Spirit? Well, he talks about in verse 4, there is one body. And not only that, but there is one Spirit, just as you were called, and one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God, the Father over all, who is through all and in all. So we don't have to wonder what the unity of the Spirit is. Those are things that I cannot amend. I cannot alter concerning that of the unity of the Spirit. But concerning the bond of peace that's talked about here in verse 3, he says, being diligent to preserve the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There are four consistent traits to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. That's my work. That's your work, to keep the bond of peace. Let's look at these for a minute. One is to respect authority. To respect authority. Over in 1 Thessalonians and in chapter 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 12 and 13. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 12 and 13. It says, "But we request you, brethren, that you appreciate those who diligently labor among you and have charge over you in the Lord, and give you instruction." Verse 13. "And that you esteem them very highly in love because of their work." A shepherd. What does a shepherd do? Well, with a lot of people today, what they want to be is they want to be church building elders. But here's what a shepherd does. A shepherd knows the sheep. Not only that, but he nurtures the young. He seeks the lost. He bandages the wounded. He cares for the weary. He protects the flock. And when that occurs, that shepherd will be respected and followed. A church doesn't follow a man just because of the fact that he has a title. There's another trait, though, that we see here in being of one mind and one spirit. And that is to restrain from controversy when we can. Paul talks about this in Titus and in chapter 3 and in verse 9, where you avoid foolish disputes. You don't spend your time on that. There's greater things that you can spend your time on. Then not only that, but he talks about the fact of resisting divisive people. Over in Titus and in chapter 3 and in verse 10, Titus chapter 3 and in verse 10, he says in verse 10, reject a factious man after his first and second warning. And there's a sub point to this as well. And that is, there are three types of individuals that should always be confronted. The first type of individual that should be confronted is one that is doing unsound or unhealthy teaching. A second type of individual that needs to be confronted is someone that is living an ungodly or immoral life, as found in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Because of that leavening effect that will happen on a congregation if you don't take care of it. Or someone, thirdly, who has a contentious or a critical spirit. Because what that will do continually, constant criticism is lethal. It'll bring down a local church. In fact, it dampens the enthusiasm of a local church. Not only that, but reflecting on the humility of Jesus. It's what Jesus did. He was humble. I have never met a contentious servant. I have met plenty of contentious Christians. But I've never met a contentious servant who is a child of God. Because those two concepts, contentious and servant, do not go together. Number three, it's your chance to emphasize the power of prayer. The early church always gathered for prayer. You look at the book of Acts, and the book of Acts, if you count it out, you'll see 48 times that the disciples gathered together to pray. And in the book of Acts and in other places as well, understand this, that prayer was always the first response. It was not the last resort. A lot of people in society today, now prayer is the last resort. Well, I've done everything else. Now I guess I'll just pray to God and see what He can do for me. But with Christians in the first century, it was always the first response, not the last resort. Prayer was a natural part with what they did. Over in Acts and in chapter 4, when Satan attacks, usually he attacks the leadership first and foremost. And this was the case here in chapter 4, where Satan was attacking as well. In chapter 4 and in verse 24 beginning, Acts chapter 4, verse 24 beginning, it says, and when they heard this, they lifted up their voices to God with one accord and said, O Lord, it is you who made heavens and earth and the sea and all that is in them. By the Holy Spirit, through the mouth of our father David, your servant, said, why did the Gentiles rage? And these peoples devised futile things. The kings of the earth took their stand. The elders were together against the Lord and against His Christ. And truly in this city they are gathered together in your holy servant Jesus, whom you anointed, both Herod and Pontius Pilate, along with the Gentiles and the peoples of Israel, to do whatever your hand and your purpose destined to occur. Then in verse 29, notice what he says. And now, Lord, take note of their threats, and grant that your bondservants may speak your word with all confidence. Verse 24, they lifted up their voices together so that they could have confidence. Number four, they emphasized generosity and sacrifice. In Philippians and in chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. Begin the sentence, though, verse 1. Therefore, if there is any encouragement of Christ, if there is any consolation of love, if there is any fellowship of the Spirit, if any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent for one purpose. Then he goes on to say here, do nothing from selfish or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another more important than yourself. Do not merely look out for your own personal interest, but also for the interest of others. Again, three sub-points here. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition. James is going to use this terminology as well over in James and in chapter 3 and in verse 16. James 3 and in verse 16, he talks here, where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there is disorder and every evil thing. What in the world is selfish ambition? Selfish ambition is a political term that comes out of the Bible. And when you talk about selfish ambition, what it really means is, I want my way. And not only do I want my way, but I'm going to gather all of my followers together in order to prove that this is right. Years ago, I preached my first sermon. I've watched people do this for 41 years. To where they try to prove a point to me. They gather people together and say, look at all these people I got together. This must be right. Over 41 years of preaching, I've never done that. Because I've always believed that me and God make a majority. And as me and God, we make a majority. You understand that people, they don't need to follow me. They need to follow God. And the idea of people coming and saying, look at all the people that I got following me here, Rob, concerning this. He says, do nothing through selfish ambition or empty conceit. He says as well, let each esteem others better than himself. The idea here is that my needs are the most important. And then he goes on to say as well, look not only for your own interests, but also for the interest of others. Because if you do nothing from selfish ambition, if you let each esteem others better than yourselves, and you look out not only for your own interests, but also for the interest of others, you're going to have harmony. You're not only going to have harmony, but you're going to meet the needs of a local congregation. People are going to be doing the work in a local congregation. And we're going to see as well that it'll influence the community around us. People will see that. Point number 5 in the lesson journey. Point number 5, they emphasize preaching and teaching Christ. He had stated in John 12 and in verse 32 that if I be lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men unto me. What has happened with different groups? What's happened with denominationalism as a whole? people have stopped lifting up Christ. And as you stop lifting up Christ, if I stop lifting up Christ, then all of a sudden what we're going to have here is just a social organization. The way we're going to do everything except lift up the Lord. In Acts 2 and in verse 36, Acts 2 and in verse 36. Acts 2 and in verse 36, he says, Therefore let all the house of Israel know for certain that God hath made him both Lord and Christ, this Jesus whom you crucify. He says over in Acts and in chapter 4 and in verse 12, Acts 4 and in verse 12, for there is salvation in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven by which given among men by which we must be saved. They went everywhere preaching and teaching the word because that's the only Christianity that they knew. Over a decade ago, the last survivor of Titanic passed away. Eva Hart was her name. She wouldn't talk about it for years. At the end of her life, she began to talk about it a little bit. They said, "What's the thing that you remember the most about that night?" And she said, "In a boat that night, the thing I remembered the most was the silence. The silence." When in a better land before the bar we stand, how deeply grieved our soul may be, if any lost one there should cry in deep despair, you never mentioned him to me. I'll give you something that I put in my old Bible years ago by an old preacher here. He said the world is lost in sin. Secondly, the gospel has the power to save every person. And thirdly, God is counting on us. I appreciate this local church. And I know you do too. And I know there's wonderful things that we have done in the past with this local church. But there's many more things that we can do with the future. We would encourage you this morning, if you need to be baptized into Christ or to come back to your first life, we invite you to come right now while together we stand while we sing.